Okay. Going to go to the audience for comments. Gib? I see a lot of hands.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. I've got a question. It seems that the premise of this whole approach of going to Framework 48 and looking at the sector ops plans was to minimize the workload and buy the PDT a little bit more time so it didn't have to be done by November. My understanding is that this motion is going to change the FMP, make this something that can be done through the sector ops plans, and expand that list of exemptions. Doesn't that in itself need to be analyzed in the Framework 48 NEPA document? And how much work is that going to take? Can that be done by November? I guess it's a question for either the agency or for council staff. Is this is a fundamental change. This was a significant issue in Amendment 16, the things that can't be exempted from the sector ops plans, and this is going to by itself require some analysis in Framework 48. Is this manageable by November?
I guess the answer is yes, or we wouldn't have brought it forward as the PDT by the PDT. I think what we have to look at is we have to look at the extent of the analysis relates to the scope of the action that's being considered. And the scope of the action under NEPA that's being considered here is a modification to request an exemption. It is not authorizing people to actually come in. That analysis would have to be done in the EAs that accompany the specific requests that go with each sector ops plan. So we think, anyway, and we're in some discussion with the NEPA folks right now at the regional office, but at least initially we believe that we can do a fairly broad qualitative analysis of the impacts of allowing people to request this. We won't have to specifically identify how many boats are coming in, what types of gear they're using, which would be accomplished in the sector, in the EAs that accompany the specific sector operations plan requests. So that's why we think right now that we can get it done. There's still some discussion going on with some of the NEPA experts at the regional office about exactly how extensive the analysis will have to be in the framework.
And whether it needs to contemplate the future actions, what may happen with right. with the sector ops plans. Okay, and then the other question I've got is the agency ready to do the cumulative effects impact analysis when potentially 19 sectors request access to all of these areas? It seems to be a significant, the number of permutations that are possible. Is the agency prepped and ready to do this to get ready for May 1st? This seems to be a significant burden and with not a whole lot of time. So are the resources available? I'm concerned that in the past the EA documents that have been done for the sector ops plans have with a very few number of exceptions have been carbon copies of one another. And my concern is that treatment is going to be repeated here and that the agency is going to gloss over the impacts that are going to take place on this one. So I want to make sure that the agency is ready to do a thorough, rigorous analysis of all of these exemption requests and not gloss it over. Is that in the plan?
So,
well, I mean, if we move forward with this action, I mean, we will be doing whatever we need to do to comply with the law, as we have done in the past. And, you know, we know that it's a big undertaking, and we've been talking about it internally. The head of the agency is supporting this, so, you know, yes, I hope that there will be enough resources to do what we need to do.
Okay. Thank you.
John.
Thanks, Terry. John Bullard, the new regional administrator, and Sue is representing the agency far better than I can, so I'm just here to make some general comments in my sixth week. And welcome to New Bedford, and thanks, Laura, for having the Groundfish Committee come to my hometown. The groundfish fishery, as you know better than I, is a disaster, and I commend you for coming here and for dealing with this issue of potentially reopening areas that were closed for a method of managing groundfish that we have left behind for a new way of managing fisheries. And now that we've left that method of managing fisheries behind in favor of another way of doing fishery management, you are properly considering whether or not we should reopen those. I commend you for that. And you're also acting with an awareness that there is an urgency because people are in trouble. My boss, Secretary Blank, declared a disaster 6 days ago, but we all know that while that disaster was formally declared 6 days ago, that this industry has been in trouble long before that formal declaration. When I assumed my responsibilities on August 6th, I said to the staff in Gloucester that we were in a crisis, and what did that mean? It meant that for all of us at the regional office in Gloucester, it meant that we should respond as if we're in a crisis. What does that mean? It means it's not a normal day at work. It means you respond as if it's a crisis, which is what, Mr. Chair, you're doing. It means you look at everything, and you put everything on the table, and you say, what can we do to help an industry that needs help? Now, I'm not a scientist. You guys know that. I've only been here 6 weeks. You all know more about this issue than I do. I don't even know why I'm here, for Pete's sake. I don't think I was quick enough with, you know, withdrawing my application for this job. But here I am, trying to figure out how to fulfill my responsibilities for the fisheries. And my definition, by the way, of fisheries is pretty simple. It's fish and fishermen. Fish and fishermen. Every day I wake up, I think we have to have fish and fishermen. Any day we don't have both, we go home. And I think there are 400 active groundfish vessels that catch 99% of the groundfish in the northeast part of this country, 400 vessels, which means you could put the active groundfish fleet for the northeast part of the country in this harbor and have room for another 100 vessels. It's a coincidentally about the number of right whales we have. 400. 400. We don't want to lose one right whale, because if we lose one, that means there's 399. It's precious. 400. We're on a razor's edge here. So there's an urgency to our action. And so everywhere I go, people are saying, now that the secretary has declared a disaster, that must mean money's going to come down from heaven. Well, guess what, folks? That's not what it means. Congress is going to do their best to go find financial resources, but there is no money right now, and it's going to be very hard for them to do that because it's a tough climate. So we're already at work trying to figure out what can we do to make income available to fishermen and to find ways to reduce expenses. Observers, you know, are there expenses that we can find ways to cut? Is there income we can make available? So obviously what you're talking about today in opening closed areas is the income side of the ledger. And I commend you. Now, the effort to protect habitat, the omnibus habitat work, which I think is 7 or 8 years in the making, 7 or 8 years. People grow old and die in 7 or 8 years. I'm sure there are reasons why it's taken that long. And I hope that the council can bring that to conclusion, because that is very important work, that come to conclusion and we find ways to protect essential fish habitat. And I hope the work that entails is somehow married with the work that you are doing, so that we can see how we can protect essential fish habitat and also do the work that you are considering of reopening areas that were closed for one reason that is no longer germane, because we manage fish now in a different way. So I commend you for not only considering it, but also considering it in a time frame that is befitting the urgency of the situation. The last thing I would say is a specific point. People have brought up the gear conflict issue, which is one of a million issues that you have to think about. My understanding is members of the industry, you know, they're no dummies. They're aware that this is an issue going on, and I think there are already conversations going on this issue, and they may be ahead of us on this, and who knows? We may have suggestions on how those conflicts can be resolved should we find how closed area 2 might be open. But I commend the PDT for thinking of ways to do this. If money is found, the guidance I must have made, I don't know, hundreds of calls to congressional staffers, I've said I hope the guiding principle is, how do you meet immediate needs in ways that have long-term benefits? How do you meet immediate needs in ways that have long-term benefits? I think the same guidance is what you can think about. You know, it's how do you meet immediate needs in ways that have long-term benefits? As you consider reopening closed areas, you're also thinking about how do you meet immediate needs in ways that have long-term benefits. That's what you're thinking about. Mr. Chair, thank you for your time and attention. I think you're on a good course of action. I know the industry needs your help, and I appreciate the way you're going about this. And again, Sue is doing a much better job than I could ever do at representing the industry, representing the regional office point of view on this. Thank you.
Well, thank you, John, for being here today. And for your willingness to work with the industry and the council to as we move into the future. I've got a long list of hands. I see Ben, Richie, Vito, John, Peter. So we'll go one at a time. Ben.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Martens with the Maine Coast Fishermen's Association and also the Port Clyde Community Groundfish Sector. And I really appreciate what Tom is trying to do here. But I still have a lot of concerns about the direction that we're going right now. And I think that listening to the new regional administrator go through what we're talking about here, and it's fish and fishermen. And coming from the Gulf of Maine and looking at the guys who are catching a lot of the fish in the inshore Gulf of Maine area, who fish along the edges of these habitat closures, along the edges of these management closures, this is where they're catching a lot of their fish. And they think that these areas are working. They think that they're really important to preserve, especially in the Gulf of Maine. I know that we want to try and get in there and catch more pollock, catch more redfish, catch more of the fish that are an abundant resource. But we also have to look at the other side of that coin, which is the Gulf of Maine cod, the Gulf of Maine haddock. These are species that we are driving to the brink of economic and commercial extinction. We aren't catching our cod. We aren't finding them out there. Right now, we've caught less than 20% of the cod in the entire New England. Even if we take a 70% hit on cod next year, that still gives a big buffer for what we can go out and catch. If we open up these closed areas, what are we going to be doing to our cod stock? There's a lot of concern around that. And I think that we need to be thinking about those other sides to it. The regional administrator is right. We need to be thinking about fish and fishermen. And we definitely need to be focused on the fishermen part of this equation. We want to make sure that all of our guys get through the next couple of years. They're really difficult. But they're not going to do that if we don't have the fish on the other side. So I really I appreciate what Tom's doing here. I think this is something that you guys should definitely vote in and something that we should be discussing and looking at. But I also want you guys considering what's happening to our cod stocks, what's happening to some of our most important economic species out there, and where we're going to be going in the next 5 years. Thanks.
Vito.
In the interest of time, I won't get into a lot of point by point and just try to emphasize that we very much support this, definitely in light of the disaster situation in the fishery. We promote any mitigating measure that could possibly be implemented, and absolutely access to the closed areas is something that we favor, especially the mortality. And I just want to point out, I thought the Habitat Committee meeting was very telling, where just to let folks know from an industry perspective, we find it difficult to hear comment time and time again about, you know, moving to hard tax and allowing access to closed areas and different things like that. And then also there's a discussion about the productivity benefits to the resources that we can extract from closing areas. And here we are in a disaster with enormous areas closed primarily for mortality protection. That was the whole idea of it. It wasn't habitat protection. It was to rebuild Georgia's Bank cod and haddock. It was to rebuild Gulf of Maine cod and haddock. And we've had these areas closed, and they have not shown the fish productivity that people believed they had. So there is a reason to revisit these, and I thought that the committee motion was very well worded in that it avoided even stepping on any potential, after 8 years, any potential options in the habitat amendment that you have right now. I mean, it's even preserving those. So I can't imagine comment that would say, don't touch habitat, when after 8 years we haven't identified any of the areas that are slated now for potential access. So we fully support, the motion. And as far as, and also as Jackie said, we just wanted to reinforce that we believe in the sector exemption process. There is an opportunity for the service to make comment as to what would be a problem, you know, for access for, you know, whether it's gillnet fishermen or hook fishermen to the different areas. So we would definitely not want to preclude the opportunity for the sectors to come forward.
Richie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rich Canastra, based New England. And first, I'd like to thank Mayor Bullard. He'll always be the mayor, you know. So I've coming up, and it's a breath of fresh air, because I think it's time now that we have to start looking back and giving back to the fisheries, meaning the fishermen. I mentioned many a times at council meetings that why are we closing areas the size of Massachusetts to protect a city of New Bedford, which is the habitat. You know, I don't think anyone's opposed to habitat, keeping the habitat closed. But again, to close an area the size of Massachusetts to protect New Bedford doesn't make sense. When sectors came through, we went through a hard tack. That hard tack right away should have opened up these closed areas. And I really believe that it's time for the council, the NGOs, if you want an environmental impact statement, or if you want to look at what the economic benefits would be, it'd be to the fishermen. And that's not a shame. That's something that we need right now. We should not be in this position as disaster relief or calling the fisheries a disaster. It shouldn't have been that way, but it is now. So I think it's up to the council, up to you people, our legislative people, to get the fisheries fishing again. And I never compared it that way, Mayor Bullard, that there's only 400 vessels and 400 right whales. And, yeah, you're correct. They could fit into the port of New Bedford. So if you look back 10 years ago when we had over 1,000 vessels, and the effort of fishing today, it just doesn't make sense. Let's bring common sense back to fishing and, you know, open up these closed areas. You know, look at the scallops in the northern edge. Those are far gone. Those scallops are far gone. And we just put them in the bank. So let's get some common sense. I really would like to see what happened in the past. Let's all forget about it. Let's take a breath of fresh air and move forward with the guidance of God himself. Thanks.
Peter.
Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. I wanted to reiterate my earlier comments without repeating them. I also wanted to fully agree with the new regional director of NIMS. I think we have to, not just the regional office, but the Science Center, really have to open a new chapter. The performance to date has been completely unacceptable to the conservation community, to the fishing community, and I think Mayor Bullard is a strong candidate to lead that change. But I'd also urge the council to continue and stay the course with the good work that's been done on habitat. I would take a different point of view. I guess that's what lawyers do, so you'll have to forgive me here if I sound like a lawyer. But Drew's comment would have been accurate if, in fact, the EFH Omnibus Habitat Amendment had been issued and approved and a record of decision had been based on it. Then, in fact, the distinctions that he's making, which are embodied in that document and have not been reduced to a decision yet, might have been accurate. Yes, the SASE model did not light up any of these areas, so they don't appear to be habitat, have habitat importance. But that is a decision that's embedded in an existing EIS, and unless I'm wrong, that EIS did include all these closed areas. The notice of intent did include analysis of all these closed areas, and I would continue to say that what you're doing here is prejudging that decision, which hasn't been made yet. And I think it is creating expectations that will not help the people who need help. Thank you.
John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Williams, owner of the fishing vessel Hannah Bowden. I'd like to preface my comments by saying that I do support groundfish coming into closed area 2. I think that if the fish are there and the science supports it, then the fishermen certainly should have access to it. With that said, though, I don't want to be a casualty of that access and have to exit. I firmly feel that the lobster industry can coexist with the groundfish fishery. We have in the past coexisted in areas. I think that what I'm hearing this morning is a lot of black and white, open it, close it, open and close, which is black and white, and I just don't think that this approach is the way to go. Not in 2012, it was the approach in the 80s, but when you look at the chart that was up there in closed area 2, it isn't closed to everybody, and there is an industry in that area, and that industry is thriving. And my vessel derives about 80% of its income from inside of that area. So I think that other than a couple of comments from Dr. Pierce and saying that the service will address the lobster industry, I think it should be addressed at this level, and I think it's this committee's obligation to at least acknowledge the fact that there is an industry in there, and it's an industry that can be directly, will be directly impacted by the decisions that are being made here. So if, I mean, if we take the ecosystem approach that everybody can share the ocean floor, and whether it's time or what it is, I think that's the approach of 2012. There's some very good, reasonable people in both industries, and I think that the industries together can sit down. We've already sat down and have talked about different scenarios that we think will work. And I think we're very close. I honestly think that both fisheries can coexist in that area. Again, with that said, I think it's this committee's obligation to recognize us in this motion to some extent to say that there is a lobster industry present and it's thriving and that we shouldn't be a casualty. We do not want to create a crisis trying to fix a crisis. Thank you.
Jim Odlin.
Jim Odlin, commercial fisherman. I support the motion. I think the PDT did a great job at capturing the underlying intent of your previous motion that was passed, and I think this is a good way to move forward. One thing I want to talk about is the gear conflict issue, and John is right. There is an industry out there, and in the past, the two industries have operated and come up with some agreements that were workable and lasted for quite some time. But if it's my recollection that the council usually did not deal with gear conflicts for a few reasons. Usually, one of them is that gear conflicts seem to be always a moving target. I mean, you can have a gear conflict today and then it's gone tomorrow, you know, because it's so seasonal, changes every year. And that if I remember, we always used to just punt that off and say that the existing Coast Guard rules and stuff will take care of the gear conflict. Now we have two very, I would say, mature industries now, lobster and the mobile gear fleet, and I submit that there will be something worked out that will be acceptable to both sides. So I just recommend that the council and the committee don't need to spend a lot of time on that, you know, recognize it, but I think it can be solved, and I think this is one of the ones you're going to let it get solved. It'll get solved. Thank you.
Bonnie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bonnie Spinizzola, Atlantic Offshore Lobstermen's Association. I'm very pleased to hear both Vito and John say that. I believe that we will have something worked out. However, with all due respect to John, I do want to say that fish and fishermen is great, and I agree with it, but there's also lobster and lobstermen. And I counted approximately or just under 20 vessels that fish in closed area 2 and basically make 80% of their living in that area. We also have, we've talked about it before, a very large percentage of egged out females or buried females from June through October, that is basically our brood stock and one of the healthiest lobster areas that we have. So I think we're probably looking at a gray area, as John said, perhaps some sort of time agreement or something. But we would actually ask the committee, and we will ask the council, if you would hold off making any recommendations about Area 2 until these groups have met and either come to agreement or not. And then go forward at that time. Thank you.
Jim Kendall.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to speak pro or con to the motion, but I'd like to voice some concerns that I have about the motion to begin with. Most of you don't even remember when this really began back around 1994. Most of you weren't here, but some of us were. And at those times, it were partial closures, temporary closures, and it was closures to certain vessels. When it became too difficult for the Coast Guard to enforce who was gaining access at those times and which vessels were which, it seemed at that point things took a little bit of a turn, and it became an issue of more conservation, and it was closed. I'll state that it was closed basically because of difficulty with enforcement, and I can understand that to some degree. But for nearly 20 years, that area has been closed. And for probably 10 years, Dr. Brian Rothschild has been calling for some sort of measure to be made to see if there was a benefit or a loss to that actual closure and what the gains and the costs were associated with these closures. And now, because someone has declared a disaster, we're going to run and open up an area and still not know what the value or consequences of those closed areas were. In 20 years' time, we still can't measure what we've done there. And my real fear is that once the industry, or if the industry, is allowed access to those areas, any consequences are going to fall on their shoulders. It's going to be their fault. It's going to be something that they did wrong once again. They killed all the fish. They did this. They did that. And we still don't know where the hell we're at. At some point, we're going to have to step back and get some better science out of this, because no matter what we do, we haven't come up with the true measure. At what point do we decide that we have to have some actual facts rather than just everyone coming up saying, yes, this is good for me, it's no good for them, or it's good for them and it's no good for me. You can't open it to me, you can't open it to them. And we still don't get to the basis of what the problem is. They keep telling us there's not enough fish, and we still don't know whether there are or not. So we're going to open up an area that will allow them, or possibly open an area that will allow them to take these few fish quicker and easier and perhaps cheaper. That's about the only benefit I see. What they really need is better science to get more fish if the fish are out there. If they're not out there, fishermen stop chasing them. That's the basic fact about fishing. You can't prosecute a fishery if there are no fish. And you can't prosecute a fishery if there are fish and no fishermen.